Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
By the time Natalie and Brooke finally signed up for the overnight investigation, the old hospital had already been abandoned for decades. Most people around town simply referred to it as the asylum, even though the facility had officially closed sometime in the late 1980s. For years, the property sat empty at the edge of town, slowly falling apart while locals traded stories about trespassers, hearing voices inside the buildings, or seeing lights moving through the upper floors late at night. Then sometime in the early 2000s, a preservation group reopened portions of the property for historical tours and paranormal investigations. That was when the place became famous. Not nationally famous. Famous enough that paranormal investigators from neighboring states started driving in for overnight events. Videos from inside the hospital ended up online constantly. And every October, the waiting list for investigations filled months in advance. Natalie and Brooke talked about going for years. Something always got in the way. Money, work schedules, relationships, life. Then rumors started spreading that the property had finally been sold to developers and would permanently close before demolition began the following year. Supposedly, the land was being cleared for apartments and retail space, and that was what finally pushed them into booking the overnight investigation. Neither of them wanted to miss the chance. The hospital looked worse in person than Natalie expected. Even from the parking lot, the place felt enormous. Multiple brick buildings stretched across the property, connected by enclosed walkways and long, dark corridors, while dead vines climbed sections of the exterior almost to the roofline. Entire rows of windows sat black and empty against the November sky. The strangest part was how quiet everything felt. Not peaceful quiet, dead quiet, like the entire property absorbed sound. The overnight group only consisted of 6 people altogether. A middle-aged couple unloaded enough paranormal equipment to fill the trunk of a car while 2 younger guys joked loudly about finding ghosts before they even reached the entrance, and then there was Travis. Natalie noticed him mostly because he barely spoke while everyone signed waivers in the lobby. Their guide introduced himself as Sammy and immediately surprised Natalie by acting completely normal. No ghost tour performance, no dramatic stories. If anything, he looked slightly exhausted. Sammy explained he had worked investigations there for years and now mostly handled overnight groups on weekends. He gave the same speech Natalie assumed he had repeated hundreds of times before. Stay inside approved areas, don't wander off alone. Certain sections remained closed because of unstable flooring and water damage. Then he unlocked the inner doors and led the group deeper into the hospital. The first hour felt more historical than paranormal. Sammy walked them through abandoned patient wards, treatment rooms, and a hydrotherapy section in the basement where rusted tubs still lined the walls beneath peeling paint. He explained how overcrowded the hospital became during the 1950s and how several wings eventually shut down years before the facility officially closed. Most of the ghost stories sounded exactly like the ones attached to every abandoned asylum in America. Footsteps, voices, shadow figures, doors slamming in empty rooms. Nothing about it really unsettled Natalie until they reached the 4th floor of one of the older patient wings. The hallway itself looked no different than the others. Long rows of empty rooms stretched beneath dim emergency lighting, while abandoned nurses' stations sat near the intersections of the corridors. The entire floor smelled damp and stale, like wet concrete and dust that had not moved in years. But the moment they stepped off the stairwell, Sammy stopped talking. Natalie noticed it immediately. Up until then, he had answered questions casually and filled silence with bits of history about the building. But on the 4th floor, he suddenly became quieter and noticeably more impatient about moving everyone along. One of the younger guys asked whether this wing had much reported activity. Sammy shrugged without really answering. A few minutes later, Brooke asked why part of the hallway farther down was blocked off with temporary fencing and heavy plastic sheeting. Water damage, Sammy answered immediately. Then he started walking again before anyone could ask anything else. The change was subtle enough that Natalie almost questioned whether she imagined it. But over the next several minutes, every conversation about the fourth floor seemed to make Sammy uncomfortable in ways he had not been earlier. He checked the time repeatedly. He avoided walking fully down the center hallway. And every time the group stopped moving, Natalie noticed him quietly looking farther down the corridor like he expected to hear something. Eventually, one of the younger guys jokingly asked if this was the really haunted part. For the first time all night, Sammy hesitated before answering. Then he quietly said something that stayed with Natalie long after the building was demolished. This floor's usually quiet before midnight. Nobody really knew what to do with that response. Sammy immediately moved the group downstairs again and continued the tour like he regretted saying anything at all. But after that, everyone paid closer attention whenever the fourth floor came up in conversation. Especially because Sammy clearly did not want to discuss it. Around midnight, the guided portion of the investigation ended. Sammy unfolded an old map across a nurse's station in the lobby and marked the sections they were allowed to investigate until sunrise. Most of the hospital remained off limits, but the approved areas still covered nearly half the building. Before leaving them alone, Sammy explained where he would be monitoring radios and cameras in case anyone needed help or decided to leave early. Then one of the younger guys asked about the fourth floor again. The entire room got quiet. Sammy stared at the map for several long seconds before finally answering. He admitted people occasionally reported hearing someone walking there late at night even when nobody else was on the floor. Usually it was only footsteps. Sometimes doors opened or closed farther down the corridor after investigators entered the wing. Brooke asked whether staff had ever figured out where the sounds came from. Sammy gave a small shrug. "Old buildings make noise," he said. But he didn't sound convinced by his own answer. Then he folded the map and started toward the exit staircase before stopping suddenly near the doorway. When he looked back toward the group, his expression had changed completely. For the first time all night, he looked genuinely serious. "If you hear footsteps up there tonight," he said quietly, "don't follow them." Then he left them alone in the hospital. For the first half hour after Sammy left, the investigation felt almost disappointingly normal. The two younger guys wandered off almost immediately with flashlights and an audio recorder, while the middle-aged couple started unpacking equipment near the lobby nurse's station like they were preparing for a television show. Natalie and Brooke mostly stayed near Travis, partly because he seemed calmer than everyone else, and partly because the hospital itself felt unnerving enough without splitting up right away. The building changed after midnight. Natalie noticed it gradually at first, and not visually either. The atmosphere changed. During the guided tour, the hospital felt abandoned but manageable. Empty hallways, broken windows, dust. Once the group was alone inside, the silence started feeling heavier somehow. Every sound carried farther than it should have. Footsteps echoed strangely through the corridors, and distant noises became almost impossible to place. At one point, Brooke stopped walking and asked if somebody else was on the floor with them. Natalie listened carefully. Footsteps, slow and steady, somewhere deeper in the building. At first, nobody reacted much because there were still several investigators moving through the approved sections. The sound could have belonged to anyone. Then Travis quietly pointed something out. The footsteps stopped every time they stopped walking. That realization settled over the group uncomfortably fast. They tested it twice afterward without openly discussing what they were doing. Whenever they continued moving, faint footsteps seemed to resume somewhere ahead of them farther down the corridor. The moment they stopped, the building went completely silent again. Brooke tried laughing it off by saying echoes probably did strange things in places like this. Nobody fully disagreed with her, but nobody looked convinced either. Around 1 a.m, they finally decided to go back to the fourth floor. Not because anyone necessarily believed Sammy's warning, mostly because he clearly did. The stairwell leading upstairs felt colder than the rest of the building. Natalie noticed faint condensation drifting through the flashlight beams as they climbed higher, though nobody mentioned it out loud. The fourth floor looked exactly the same as earlier. Long hallway, dark rooms, weak emergency lighting humming overhead. Plastic sheeting still blocked the far end of the corridor near the damaged section Sammy avoided during the tour. For several minutes, nothing happened. The group moved slowly between patient rooms while Brooke snapped photos, and the middle-aged couple asked questions into a digital recorder nobody realistically expected to answer. Then they heard the footsteps again, not behind them, ahead of them, slow, measured, crossing the hallway somewhere beyond the plastic sheeting. Every flashlight immediately turned toward the sound. Nobody spoke for several long seconds. The footsteps continued anyway. One of the younger guys muttered that somebody else must have ignored the restricted area signs and wandered upstairs. The explanation sounded reasonable enough at first, except the footsteps never sounded hurried or uncertain the way another investigator probably would have. They sounded casual, like somebody pacing. Travis quietly asked whether anyone else noticed something strange about the sound. Natalie knew exactly what he meant before he explained it. The footsteps never got closer. No matter how long they listened, they always sounded the same distance away. Then came the first door slam, and it echoed sharply somewhere beyond the blocked hallway before the entire floor dropped silent again. Brooke flinched hard enough that Natalie instinctively grabbed her arm. One of the younger guys called out asking if somebody was down there. No answer. The middle-aged couple suddenly looked much less excited about ghost hunting. Then the footsteps started again. Same pace, same direction, still somewhere ahead of them. Natalie glanced toward the plastic sheeting blocking the damaged section of hallway and realized something she wished she had not noticed. The footsteps sounded like they were moving deeper into the restricted area, and without really discussing it, the entire group slowly started following them. At first, nobody acknowledged that was what they were doing. The younger guys led the way with flashlights while everyone else drifted after them almost automatically. The farther they moved down the hallway, the quieter the hospital seemed to become around them. Even the building noises faded, until the only thing left was the steady sound of footsteps somewhere ahead. Then suddenly the footsteps stopped. The silence afterward felt immediate and unnatural. One of the younger guys lifted the plastic sheeting slightly and shined his flashlight into the restricted section beyond it. The hallway continued another 40 or 50 feet before turning sharply out of sight. Most of the overhead lighting no longer worked there, leaving the corridor almost completely dark except for weak flashlight beams stretching across peeling paint and abandoned doorways. Nobody moved at first. Then Brooke quietly asked where the footsteps went. That was when Natalie realized something else. The entire floor suddenly smelled different. Not mold, not dust. Something sharper, like antiseptic. Old hospital antiseptic. Travis noticed it too. Nobody had time to say much more because somewhere beyond the corner, deeper in the restricted hallway, a door slowly opened. Nobody moved after the door opened. The sound echoed through the restricted hallway slowly enough that it almost felt intentional, as though whoever opened it knew they were standing there listening. The younger guy holding the flashlight lowered the plastic sheeting immediately while everyone else stared into the darkness beyond the barrier. For the first time all night, nobody looked excited anymore. Brooke quietly asked whether they should radio Sammy, but before anybody answered, one of the younger guys insisted somebody else had to be upstairs messing with them. Another investigation group probably wandered into the restricted area looking for reactions. The explanation sounded reasonable enough, until Travis pointed something out. They had not heard more than one set of footsteps the entire night. That shut everyone up immediately because he was right. Every sound they had heard upstairs came from a single person moving slowly through the hallway ahead of them. Then the footsteps started again, closer this time. The sound crossed somewhere beyond the plastic barrier before stopping completely. Natalie realized the antiseptic smell had grown stronger too. It no longer smelled faint or distant. The entire fourth floor suddenly carried the sharp, sterile smell of an active hospital beneath all the mold and dust. One of the younger guys lifted the plastic barrier again before anybody could stop him. This time everyone looked. The hallway beyond remained dark except for flashlight beams stretching across cracked tile floors and peeling walls. Empty patient rooms lined both sides, while old wheelchairs and broken equipment sat shoved against the walls beneath hanging tarps. Then Brooke quietly whispered that somebody was standing down there. At first, Natalie could not see what she meant. Then the flashlight shifted slightly, and suddenly the figure became visible near the far end of the hallway where it turned out of sight. Thin, pale, completely motionless. Nobody spoke. The younger guy holding the flashlight finally called out, asking whether they were supposed to be upstairs. No answer came back. The figure remained perfectly still for several seconds before slowly stepping backward behind the corner and disappearing from sight. That finally broke the tension. One of the women immediately said they needed to leave, while the younger guys argued over whether they should follow whoever they had just seen. Brooke already had the radio in her hand, trying to contact Sammy. Only static answered her. Then somewhere beyond the corner, a woman laughed softly. The sound lasted maybe a second, but every person standing there heard it. Brooke grabbed Natalie's arm hard enough to hurt while one of the younger guys finally backed away from the plastic sheeting completely. That was when Travis suddenly asked where the other guy went. Everyone turned at once. One of the younger guys was gone. Nobody remembered seeing him walk away. His friend immediately started shouting his name toward the restricted section, but no answer came back. One of the women tried radioing Sammy again, while Travis stepped carefully into the blocked hallway. The others followed because suddenly nobody wanted to split up anymore. The farther they moved into the restricted section, the colder the air became. Water stains spread across the ceilings overhead, while abandoned equipment sat piled beneath dusty tarps along the walls. Then they found the flashlight. It sat on the floor near the corner where they had seen the figure standing earlier, still turned on, its beams stretching weakly across the opposite wall. But the guy carrying it was gone. His friend started yelling louder now, real panic finally creeping into his voice. Travis moved ahead of everyone else and carefully looked around the corner at the end of the hallway. Then he stopped walking. Natalie immediately knew something was wrong from the expression on his face. The hallway beyond should not have existed. According to the map downstairs, the restricted section ended at the corner because part of the floor farther ahead had collapsed years earlier during water damage. But another corridor stretched ahead of them now, long and dimly lit, with patient room doors lining both sides. And somewhere far down that hallway, footsteps continued moving slowly away from them. Then they turned around and realized the hallway behind them no longer looked right either. The plastic barrier separating the restricted section from the rest of the fourth floor was gone. In its place sat another dim hallway stretching behind them into darkness. That was when the radio finally crackled. Sammy's voice came through loud enough to make everyone jump. He sounded panicked, not concerned, panicked. He kept asking where they were. Travis answered immediately, explaining they were still on the fourth floor near the restricted hallway. For several long seconds, Sammy said nothing back. Then he asked a question that made Natalie's stomach drop. Did you follow the footsteps? Nobody answered immediately because they didn't need to. Sammy exhaled shakily over the radio before explaining that other investigators had become disoriented on the fourth floor after hearing footsteps late at night. Some lost track of time. Others claimed hallways looked wrong afterward. One woman disappeared for nearly 2 hours before staff found her sitting alone in an empty patient room, insisting the hospital was still operating. Sammy told them not to keep walking deeper into the hallway, no matter what they heard. Then somebody farther down the corridor spoke, and it was the missing guy. He sounded confused, almost irritated, like he could not understand why the others were not following him. His friend immediately started toward the voice before Travis grabbed him hard enough to nearly knock him backward. Then the footsteps started again, only now there was more than one set. Several people walking slowly somewhere deeper in the corridor while distant doors opened and closed beyond view. Natalie would later say that was the moment the hallway stopped feeling abandoned, because suddenly it sounded occupied. Sammy's voice snapped over the radio again, ordering them to turn around and keep walking without stopping, no matter what they heard behind them. So they did. Nobody spoke while they moved. Nobody looked down the side hallways they passed. The footsteps continued somewhere behind them the entire time, sometimes sounding close enough that Natalie became convinced somebody was walking only a few feet back in the darkness. Then, almost suddenly, the plastic sheeting appeared again ahead of them. The real fourth floor Travis shoved the barrier aside, and the entire group stumbled back into the normal hallway so fast they nearly knocked into one another. The antiseptic smell disappeared immediately. The building noises returned too. Normal sounds, and then they realized the missing guy was standing beside the stairwell, alive, confused, and apparently unaware he had disappeared at all. He insisted he only walked a few feet ahead after hearing someone call his name from farther down the hallway. He genuinely thought the others had been directly behind him the entire time. Nobody stayed upstairs after that. Downstairs, Sammy finally admitted staff quietly avoided overnight investigations on the fourth floor whenever possible. Too many people reported hearing occupied rooms late at night or smelling antiseptic in sections of the building that had sat empty for decades. But the footsteps were always the beginning. Every serious incident staff dealt with on the fourth floor started the same way. Someone heard footsteps ahead of them and followed. The hospital was demolished less than a year later. Months after demolition finished, Brooke called Natalie after running into the younger guy who disappeared upstairs. Apparently, he finally remembered something else about that night. While separated from the group, he believed he was walking through an active hospital ward. He remembered patient room doors standing open, with dim light spilling into the hallway. He remembered hearing distant conversations and metal carts moving somewhere nearby. But the part that still bothered him most was the people inside the rooms. He said they watched him walk past, not speaking, not moving. Just watching him like they already knew he did not belong there. Natalie still thinks about how relieved everyone felt stepping back into the real fourth floor hallway that night, because for several minutes, none of them were completely sure they were ever going to find it again.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.